Before you listen to this podcast, you can subscribe to The Critic magazine with the current offer of 5 issues for just £10. Head to our website, www.thecritic.co.uk, to subscribe today.
Sir Richard Sheppard, for 35 years an independently minded Conservative MP, died last month. How should he be remembered? As a Eurosceptic and a natural rebel, certainly, and also as the founder of Partridges, one of London's most loved food shops. But was he, at heart, a libertarian, or a traditional Tory, or an old-school liberal? Joining The Critic's deputy editor, Graham Stewart, to discuss Richard Sheppard's life in politics, in this podcast, are his former parliamentary colleagues, Barry Legg and Sir Bill Cash.
Sir Richard Sheppard was an MP from 1979 to 2015, so the better part of 35, almost going on 36 years. Bill Cash, when you first became an MP in 1984, what sort of reputation did Richard Sheppard already have by then? Or was he just at the outset of defining himself as an independent-minded Tory MP?
Well, interestingly enough, I did actually come across him in 1983 over the privatisation of British Telecom. And I'd noticed a very, very strong independent streak about this young member of parliament, which immediately brought him to my attention. So when I got in the House of Commons, I think that was probably the first conversation I ever had with him, because he came in 79, which was all of 4 or 5 years before I did. So I had already had some experience of what he'd been up to, and it was consistent with what he did in the rest of his political career. He always had a very strong independent and very, very courageous position.
Independent-minded people are often not team players. They can be loners. They can be even be quite curmudgeonly difficult people. What kind of personality was Richard Sheppard, Bill?
Well, he was collegiate for a cause. That's the point. And actually, sometimes, and in particular in the context of the European question, it began as a really quite a small group of people. But the team expanded and gradually enveloped the whole of the House, or at least certainly the whole of the Conservative Party in terms of policy, culminating in the general election of 2019. And then, of course, the subsequent enactments, which gave back sovereignty and democracy to the United Kingdom. So for practical purposes, it's small beginnings, but it was based on a collegiate sense of patriotism, as well as an understanding of what was at stake. And Richard, above all else, if I may say, was a person of that kind. And so were other people who took part in that process right the way through the 1990s and beyond.
First and foremost, Richard Sheppard will be remembered as one of the Maastricht rebels. Barry Legg, you came into the House of Commons as MP in 1992, nicely timed for what became known as the Maastricht Rebellion. Did you have a sense then of a cohesive and coherent group of rebels who were determined to vote against the deal that John Major brought back from Maastricht? Or was it an evolving process which actually spread over 2 to 3 years in which different coalitions of backbenchers came and went and developed their thinking? And how important was Richard Sheppard to the cohesion of that group or these groups?
Well, I think the catalyst for the Maastricht Rebellion was really Britain's exit from the exchange rate mechanism. That really took the scales away from a lot of people's eyes. And it also considerably discredited the Prime Minister, John Major, and leading figures in the cabinet, such as Michael Heseltine. So I think leaving the ERM being ejected from the ERM and the farce of having 15% interest rates, this was going to happen just before we started considering the bill, really solidified backbench opposition to the Maastricht Treaty. And the process of opposing Maastricht went on for some months. Interestingly, the Chancellor of the Exchequer at the time of the exit from the ERM, Norman Lamont, ended up really being very much with the Maastricht rebels. So that was the catalyst. And Maastricht and monetary union, I think, led the way to Britain's ultimate rejection and the people of this country's rejection of the European Union. The scales fell away from a lot of people's eyes, and the idealism that was originally associated with the joining the European Union all fell away. Richard was a complete stalwart throughout Maastricht. He was an unbending opponent. He understood the philosophy that lay behind the European Union, and he was the staunchest of opponents. And I would also say he was one of the most pleasant people I ever met in the House of Commons.
Hear, hear.
Mm-hmm. Bill, did you find Richard Sheppard's opposition to Maastricht really a very important part of the campaign to overturn the treaty? Was his strength built on respect people had for him for his character and his independence of mind? Or was he an effective parliamentarian on his own terms?
I think he was both. Actually, we became very, very close friends. And in fact, I did see a lot of him as much as I could. I spoke to him regularly on the telephone up to the time of his death. And very sadly, I had actually made arrangements with his friend, his carer, actually, to come in and see him in the very week that he died. I mean, it's a terrible loss to me personally. But I wanted to go back to the issue that you raised by saying, yes, it was both. And he actually brought in a bill which has so far not been mentioned at all in any of the obituaries. I've done a tribute to him in the House magazine, which will explain this, which I suppose will come out next week. But it was in 1992, and he and I were talking about what needed to be done in terms of restoring sovereignty. And I'd said to him, look, we know perfectly well that we're not going to be able to get a referendum unless we can persuade the people outside. And that was the Maastricht referendum campaign, which we set up. But also to have Parliament itself pass a sovereign act of Parliament, which would enable us to be able to put pressure and to explain and convince other members of Parliament that the referendum was necessary. Of course, this was bitterly opposed by John Major, bitterly opposed by the Eurofanatics, and indeed, generally speaking, on both sides of the House of Commons, with the exception of that collegiate group of Eurosceptics, of which Richard was a preeminent part. And the bill that he brought in was in fact debated in February 1992, which is early days. And I obviously worked with him and helped him with it. And in fact, I think brought in the man who drafted the bill called Godfrey Carter, who used to be in Parliamentary Counsel's office. So we worked together on it. And then the bill was debated and voted on. And that was in February 1992. And interestingly, again, now a lot of the commentary seems to have missed this point, Margaret Thatcher voted for the bill. And she did so in company of only 46 members of Parliament for a very curious reason. The division bells didn't ring throughout the House of Commons. And the result was that really 46 people turned up. And I remember making points of order, which I've refreshed my memory on, saying, well, it doesn't really, because the deputy speaker said, I'll give everybody an extra 2 minutes to turn up. I said, well, I said in the point of order, what's the point in giving them an extra 2 minutes if they don't know the bell has gone, which seemed pretty obvious. But the reality was that Richard's speech was a tremendous example of everything that he believed in. It was quite a long speech, but it's very, very well worth reading. And I'm strongly commending parliamentarians and others to read the speech when I publish this tribute to him, hopefully next week.
Well, given that the Maastricht Treaty involved an opt-out for Britain joining the euro, and Britain subsequently did not join the euro, what is the arc of narrative between the Maastricht Treaty and the events that led to Brexit? Do you see a direct correlation between what Maastricht set up, or is the route a bit more convoluted?
Graham, it's terribly simple. There are two words: it's sovereignty and democracy. It's terribly simple. And when we set up the European Foundation, the logo was freedom and democracy. The bottom line is it's about sovereignty. It's about the ability to govern yourself. There isn't anything convoluted about it. There are a lot of our enemies tried to make it so. It's always been quite straightforward. And interestingly, in some of the obituaries, there was actually some reference which took some people by surprise to the fact that Tony Benn, for example, from the other side of the house, was thought to be and was in fact very friendly on this issue, if no other, to the conservative Eurosceptics. And I can remember that even when Tony Benn came into the House of Commons after he'd left the House of Commons, he would frequently come up to me and talk to me as a good friend, as he would put it, on this issue. And so also in the Maastricht referendum campaign, where I shared a platform with him, which I think was the only time he shared a platform with any conservative in Trafalgar Square, calling for a referendum on Maastricht. And Richard was part of that collegiate in national interest on the European question across the floor of the House. It was very, very central to the centre of gravity of what the House of Commons is about, which is the self-government in a parliamentary democracy, in a free democracy, whatever your political views may be on other matters.
Barry Legg, during the John Major's government from the period from after Maastricht, from 92 to 97, did you have a sense that the fundamental factors that Bill Cash has just spoken of were unchanging, and ultimately Brexit would happen? Or at that time, with Maastricht passed, were you in a state of despondency, thinking that things would only get worse?
I wasn't in a state of despondency, but I certainly knew there was a long way to go. Maastricht opposition was carried by basically 27 Conservative MPs. There were some 340 in the House, and although there were plenty of sympathisers, I think anyone that understood politics understood we had a very long way to go. And for all the defects of the European Union, it required the European Union to show itself in its true colours over the subsequent 20, 25 years, and completely discredit this idea, which was often advanced by our opponents, that it was just a collection of independent states who had a very similar agenda working together for a common good. So I think in all reality, there was a very long way to go. But the way Europe unfolded was very much the way in which Bill has described and Richard was a leading advocate of. All those defects that we highlighted during Maastricht became more and more apparent in the House of Commons, and even more importantly, amongst the British people as a whole.
Mm-hmm. More broadly, what was Richard Shepherd's philosophy? Would you think of him as a libertarian or a 19th century liberal like Bill Cash's ancestor John Bright, or a traditional Tory?
Margaret Thatcher was very fond of using the word liberty. She always presented herself as a defender of liberty, and the word liberty rolled off her tongue very easily. Now, I would say Richard was actually a stronger and more convinced advocate of liberty than Margaret Thatcher. And if you look over the whole of his parliamentary career, he was someone, for instance, who wanted to reform the Official Secrets Act. He was very concerned about individuals that might be caught up in that. And Margaret Thatcher opposed his attempts to reform the Official Secrets Act. So I think he was probably the doughtiest defender of liberty in its pure sense that I knew on the Conservative benches.
So we have Wilkes and liberty and Shepherd and liberty in that case. I say actually that I agree with what Barry's just said, because remembering, of course, that both Barry and I were very friendly with Richard and knew him very well and progressed with him. And I would say that even after Barry, in my opinion, very tragically left the House of Commons, because I would love him to have stayed on. All I can say is that the battle went on in other areas. I mean, for example, Richard was very prominent in criticising the government over the Scott inquiry. And there were other areas, I remember Crown Immunity, where I worked with him on that too. So there is this stream of activity which is going on even outside the European question, where he's expressing himself in a whole range of matters which are at the heart of constitutional liberty, as he would see it, and matters of great importance to the ordinary everyday lives, not only of his constituents, but also the country as a whole.
Bill, you said that you had kept up with Richard Shepherd in retirement and had been in contact with him very shortly before his death. He was fortunate in one respect, fortunate to see the realisation of Brexit. How much did that mean to him, and what was his philosophical ruminations at the end of his life about the trajectory of British politics?
Well, I have to say, he was absolutely overjoyed. I mean, I can't express to you how deeply he felt that the success of everything that we'd fought for did actually happen. And I would often discuss this with him. And in fact, the conversation that Barry and you and I are having in this podcast actually strongly reflects everything that we would discuss from time to time when I would have a chat with him. And I would say that in a nutshell, it was just pure joy because he felt it emotionally. The one thing we haven't stressed at the moment actually is not only that he was dedicated and that he was a collegiate member of the group of people who were in a minority to begin with, but the joy that he had was part of his emotional response. Because if I was to ask the question, or somebody was to ask the question, what was the prevailing characteristic of Richard Shepherd on the floor of the House of Commons? It was literally shaking with emotion quite often. It was a very extraordinary experience. And I would say very much like, although I wouldn't necessarily have agreed with Charles James Fox any more than Burke did over the French Revolution, but the one thing about Charles James Fox was his emotional approach to the House of Commons. And I think that is an incredibly important part of Richard's makeup.
Well, we must
leave it there, I'm afraid. But it's been wonderful to talk to two of Richard Shepherd's friends and indeed former parliamentary colleagues, Barry Legg and Sir Bill Cash. Thank you both for remembering Sir Richard Shepherd in this way.
Thank you.
Thank you, Graham.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, why not subscribe to have the magazine delivered to your door? Subscribe today with the current offer of 5 issues for £10 by heading to our website www.thecritic.co.uk.